If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Gavin Emmett, and this is the BT Sport MotoGP podcast. Today, I'm joined by Keith Ewan and Colin Edwards here at the Sachsenring in Germany ahead of round nine of the season. Fellas, this is the halfway point of the season when we finish here at the Sachsenring. Marc Marquez currently has a 24-point lead over second place Lorenzo, 42 points ahead of Valentino Rossi after he crashed out. Marc was delighted, wasn't he, when he came across the line in Assen to take second place. You rarely see him celebrating it that much. But how impressive is he right now? At the beginning of the season, we weren't expecting this, were we, him to have such a big lead at this point of the year?
Nobody was, and I don't think he was either, Colin, at the end of the day. And arriving here at the Sachsenring with a record like he's got here as well. I mean, he hasn't been beaten here since 2010, if my records are right. I mean, the guy's been imperious here. But I've got to say, and it's great that we got Colin in today, I must say, because what I wanted to get to straight away, and you're right on it with Marc Marquez, great record and everything. But as we drove through the hills to get here, and it's chucking it down with rain, it's dark, it's dank, I'm just thinking, turn 11, Michelin's. No running done here before. We had everybody, every MotoGP rider on the card crashed at Assen at some stage of the weekend. All of them. Was that your stat, actually,
Kev? Yeah. I'll take it. I'll wear it on the shoulder.
I borrowed it from you. Was it you? Did you wear that one out?
Yeah, we've got asymmetric front tyres here this weekend for the first time for Michelin. This track's a tester, isn't it, when the conditions are a bit tricky as we sit here?
It is. I don't like it. I've never liked this track, even though it's, you'd think, you know, being American, left, you guys do nothing but turn left, you know, dirt tracking. I've never gotten along with it. It's a weird go-karty feel to it, you know, it never really kind of opens up. Should be, you know, getting back to Marquez, he's been, after Qatar, I think we were all, I know myself, I was thinking, this is not going to happen, you know, with the bike and with the situation he had going on. But he's been consistent, and you know, that's with Marquez. I think he's actually matured. If I could say that, you know, I mean, he's won a couple world champ or however many, but he's matured. He's saying at Assen, you know, second place, that's good enough. I'll take the points.
He's picked up points every race this year. I know there was Le Mans crash and he finished home. He's changed his attitude, hasn't he, this season?
Slightly scary that the attributes you've just given the track, turning left and all the rest of it being a short track, and you don't like it. Hodgie said exactly the same to me on the way in the car a few minutes ago. I think the general consensus is that, and yet when you go to the press conference just a little earlier on, the dirt track turning left thing that you were taking the mickey out of a moment, not only an American can, of course, was something that Marc Marquez quite liked. It was a track that he gets on really, really well with, and the Honda, the fact that it doesn't chuck any power out at the moment, or not the right kind of power to get it off the corners as well, he seemed to think that might level it out a little bit and be in his favour.
Well, the Honda's always been good here because it does chunk the power out, you know, right off the corners, little stop-and-go squirt things. And it's always been good around here at carrying the momentum around that long left. I'm pretty interested to see how this configuration, this bike, what they have, how it's going to work here, if it's going to be as dominant as it has been in the past.
Yeah, as we talk about the Honda and how it's been impressive in the past, he won 10 in a row in 2014. He got 13 wins that season. So what about what he's doing this year compared to a couple of years ago? Is it perhaps even more impressive what he's up to
for me,
in
yeah.
2016?
For me, yeah, maturity. He's a different Marc Marquez, isn't he? He's just learnt how to roll it off slightly. So we've lost the electronics that would have controlled the motorbike in the past. Now it's in his head, which is a bit old school, really, isn't he? The kid seems to be able to do whatever you really need to do on a motorbike.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's hard to be more impressive than he was, let's say. Yeah. I mean, honestly. But like you said, it is just a sign of maturity. You know, whenever you get to that point, and you push and you push, you either win or crash, win or crash. There comes a day when you say, hey, if I wouldn't have crashed those two times, I would have had enough points to win that championship. And he's finally, I think, come to that realization.
Rossi was clearly livid after his crash, wasn't he, last time out? I just spoke to him earlier on as well, and he's still feeling it.
I got something with that. So they normally take, and this is what, I don't know if he explained it in the press conference or not, or throughout social media, but they normally take your split of your last, your third sector split, that's what they put on the board, which at that time would have been, I don't know, 1.8 or 1.6, whatever they put on the board. Or 0.5. I don't know what it was. But anyways, that right past that split is where Dovey crashed. So then that extra second or 1.2 that he had on third place, that didn't show up on his pit board whenever he crossed it. It still said plus 0.6 or 0.7. So he's still thinking he had to push. Whereas if that says plus 2.1, you say, okay, you know, chill out, relax. That's when he said, I didn't realize I had the big lead as I had.
And a lot of riders were saying when they switched the softer tyre in the second half, it was pushing the front. Where the front tyre, it seems, in the wet was rock solid and could have done 200 laps, kept going. They all went out with the original fronts on there, but the softer rear was pushing. So he said, that's what he said, Dovey said. Everyone who crashed pretty much said that.
Might not have been down to tyres as much as anything as well. That track seems slipperier to me than it's ever been at Assen before. Assen used to have so much wet weather grip.
It always did.
There was no grip there. Yeah. It didn't seem to have grip anyway.
That's what the riders were saying as well.
You can blame the tyres, though, for that. I think there's something changed at Assen this last year.
Well, do we think his title's done, though? Is his goose cooked?
No, we're halfway. It's only halfway this weekend.
But he hasn't won a championship before when he's had three DNFs. The last rider to win a championship with three DNFs was Mick Doohan, 1998. He's looked strong, hasn't he?
Statistics.
Yeah, he's looked strong this year, it's fair to say.
Okay, I've asked two people that are in the know. Okay, I'm not going to give up names, but I said, hey, who is, in your opinion, the strongest person on the grid right now? Like all year, when you look at around everything, both of them said Valentino.
Yeah.
Right now, on the grid, he's the strongest guy. He's the most consistent. He's up the front. You know, you look at some of the things, Mario Lorenzo's having trouble. So, I mean, when you look at all of them together, he's the strongest guy on the grid right now.
But he didn't take his chance at Assen, and it could be crucial.
Yeah, like, absolutely. That's 25 points, or 20, or 16, whatever. Anything's better than nothing.
Yeah. What happened to Lorenzo at Assen?
Well, I tell you, there's something else we were discussing, and it took us the 3 hours that we drove here to come up with no conclusion. He looked amateur. I've never seen a man of his quality, his stature, ride so badly in adverse conditions. I mean, we know, you know, that place with, it was slippery. It looked slippery. It looked treacherous. Everyone had been down. He'd been down. It's where he hurt himself before here as well. It's a situation where you just wonder what was messing with his head. But to have an off day that far off, I can't remember a rider of his quality having a day like that.
And, yeah, I mean, honestly, I think this started in Barcelona. You know, Barcelona was going downhill quick whenever Iannone took him out. And you as a rider, Keith, you know, I mean, as far as bike setup, he sets the bike up completely different than myself or Valentino would. He puts a lot of weight on the rear, takes it off the front. That's just his riding style. The Bridgestone wets, you could get away with it. He won races with it. With the Michelin, if you noticed, everybody that crashed there on the weekend, they lost the front. He went out the way he has his bike set up. He just has no feeling, no confidence whatsoever in the front. And in the rain, it didn't come to him.
Yeah. Remarkable, though, just how far off he was.
Yeah, and he was actually lucky in the end to pick up 6 points, because in the first part of the race, he was down in 20th, and it could have even been worse. But for all those crashes that we did see, one man who didn't crash out, though, and who made the Honda work, was Jack Miller. Jack Assen, as Keith so finally put it at the end of...
Stole it from you.
The race.
Got it out there before you.
You had a chance to get... You had the power of the mic at that moment. We've got... Actually, I did an interview with him earlier on. It will be on the BT Sport coverage this weekend. We're going to put the full interview out as a podcast next week as well, because I tell you what, it's a breath of fresh air. He's brilliant. I had tears rolling down my face. I've never had that in an interview before. That boy is great. And
What accent did he have?
I know it was his full...
His full foreign accent, he was same
on,
as Cal Crutchlow.
No, he was on full Townsville form. I have to say, to be fair to him. But he showed his talent, showed it. And I think united the paddock in people being happy for someone. First independent winner since 2006, first Aussie for ages. You know, he broke a few records and proved a few people wrong over the weekend, and in that race in particular.
and nobody knows how to party like he does. I mean, that whole team, don't they? They make us all welcome. They make the whole paddock welcome. And there's more hangers-on in the Mark VDS team than drinking gallons of beer after an event. And that's the place to go, ladies and gentlemen, if you manage to get yourself in the paddock.
Yeah, we were at Goodwood, we're all gathered around the table, Hayden and Spencer. And, I mean, we're all just gathered around watching, and everybody that had raced or ridden motorcycles at Goodwood, all the old guys, everybody there had a smile on their face. Everybody was happy for him. We've known he's a talent forever. As far as the package and getting things right, we know the Honda's not the easiest bike to ride. It worked for him that day. I think he's happy that it's happened, obviously. Take it with a grain of salt as well. The conditions that day on that track at that time, everything worked. He knows there's still a big uphill battle to climb.
But Marquez didn't need to beat him either, did he?
Yeah, Marquez didn't need to.
He took 20 points, and that's the new Marquez. Yeah. He'd have gone for the 25.
Will he get confidence out of it, though, Jack? Will we see? Because he was starting to creep upwards. He got his best result previously the time before, rather than Mugello or Barcelona,
Man, I've ridden with a lot of Australians in my time, being Courser, Bayless, and Goddard, and to name a few, Gardner,
you can go back as long as you like.
It's pretty hard to knock the confidence out of them. I mean, honestly,
this is coming from a Texan.
It's pretty hard to kind of knock them down. They're just the way they're bred and the way that where they've come from. They're just automatically confident. It's hard to knock them down. And I've never seen Jack in the dumps like, oh man, I can't get this thing to turn. He's not like that. I mean, no Australians I know are like that.
And he's still got an injury, of course, that he's still carrying parts of that leg that he did in a motocross accident. So, I mean, he's not quite fully fit either. And nobody fit, apart from maybe the man you mentioned just then, Troy Courser. He's about the only bloke I know that finishes a race like Jack Miller. He's got it stood on end.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a wheelie, it's on end.
It's a celebration, baby.
Yeah, I know. It was great, I think. And as we said, all enjoyed it here. Who knows what could happen this weekend, depending on the weather. If we do have similar kinds of rain, similar kinds of weather, what do we make of the red flag that we got there starting again? The first part really only meant, it only served to set up the grid for the second part of the race. So what do we think about that?
I read some people saying they prefer the aggregate races where you add it together. Absolute rubbish. That's the worst kind for teams, for riders, for everybody. To try and add up where you are, it's impossible. It's just a nightmare. A scratch race, everybody going for it. A race is a race. I mean, from my personal point of view, to go back to aggregate.
Yeah, because a lot of people were saying, you're right, on Twitter, were leaping on and saying, I think we can, we can assume that everyone can work it out. The computers can do it quickly enough and let you know who's who, who's where on track.
Yeah, but it's about the rider. Yeah. The rider and the team have got to work it out. They've got to give him enough. You heard a moment ago what Colin said about Valentino being his board just outside. There's no ship-to-shore radio. They can't tell him. It's not on the dashboard. The only thing they've got on their dashboard is lap times. So at the end of the day, there's not going to be anything there to say, you've got to speed up a bit to catch him. You're now 4.2 on aggregate off. It's going to fry your brain.
Yeah, I mean, you've done the aggregate. I've done the aggregate. It's hard to keep up with. And as unfair as it may be at times, such as Aston, you had guys that were out for, I think it's still correct to kind of, okay, let's start over. You got your grid positions. That's your little bonus for doing what you just did and start the race again. At Aston, it just so happened everybody chose the softer tire on the rear, which the bike reacts completely different. And it was kind of mayhem there for a little while.
We've got to go on to the Brits, and we have to mention Scott Redding, who had a great Aston podium there for him, and a bit like Jack Miller, a big boost after what's been a tricky start to the season with the mechanical problems that he's had here and there, inopportune moments for him.
Misano last year, Aston this year. He's going to shortly be getting a name for slippy conditions, isn't he? But same thing applies. It's a big boost to your confidence when you can bring it home and get it on the podium, that is for certain.
And someone else who it could help him turn the corner, because we've seen his pace in the dry as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, we know he's a talent. Right now, man, it's so hard to beat the top six bikes. We know that, okay? You got your two Yamahas, your Hondas, and your Ducatis. In dry conditions, when everything's right, everything's perfect, it's really hard to get around and beat them. The rain is definitely an equalizer. At the same time, your factory guys that are up there in the points aren't going to take as much risk like we saw Marquez. They're going to say, I'll settle for what I can settle for. And it equalizes everything, but it also gives your guys on the satellite bikes a boost like, hey, man, it's equal now. So if I push a little bit more, I might crash, I might win, in Miller's case.
Bradley Smith, to move on to him, 13th for him. He had a crash, picked up, finished, I think, two or three laps down in the end. Bit unfortunate because it looks like we're starting to see the green shoots of recovery for Bradley.
Long enough to go this year still. It's not over and done with yet, is it? We're only on round nine. We've got another nine to go after this one. So I think this is going to be a key issue as we go into the summer break. Seems really disjointed this year as well. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but the Euros have interfered with it. Wimbledon, football, Formula One.
And all, the Olympics
so,
will.
Yeah, so we've got 2 weekends off, then 2 weekends off, now 3 weekends off after this. Kind of loses momentum. You've been testing at Sepang, Colin. It's tough when your mind's gone off the ball a little bit, even when you're on the periphery like we all are to a great extent now. But for a rider, I can't imagine how that feels when the momentum's took out your ear.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like you said, you got the ball rolling and then, okay, pause for a little bit. You go home, you train, you do what you got to do, keep your head right and get back with it. Back to Bradley, that you were talking earlier, I think you have to understand when he got on Grand Prix bike, he got on Bridgestones. So he's known nothing but Bridgestones his whole career. Espargaro on Bridgestones, or two of the top guys that I would say are struggling that were really good last year, Espargaro and Smith. They just sometimes it happens whenever you change tires, you get one or two guys that just it takes a little bit longer to adapt and understand the new rubber.
Funny that that's in the same team, though, isn't it? At the end of the day, you wonder how much of that is down to what resources they have within a team to overcome that situation. Because, I mean, everybody struggled with the front end on those Michelins when they first started testing them. But plenty of seem to... I remember your phrase, actually. And again, talking with Hodgie on the way, we had such a long drive on the way here.
Hodgie, that must have been terrible.
Yeah, I'd have been asleep. Hopefully you were... Well,
I've never seen a man on his phone eating McDonald's, driving...
I thought he was chiselled out of steel, eating McDonald's.
But what I was going to say is that so many people have struggled with this Michelin this year. With a Michelin, you have feel. With a Bridgestone, it's faith.
It's faith.
But, I mean, it seems to have proved the opposite as we've rolled on a bit. That Michelin doesn't seem to have the feel. People are crashing on that front end quite a lot.
You know, I can't say anything bad about the tire, obviously.
Absolutely.
It's just different. The Bridgestone, you could go in and you could overload everything and everything would work. The Michelin, you just can't overload it. You have to take what it gives you.
It's funny that you just said that because I was just about to mention that Rossi was complaining about the brakes. He was saying it's just a bit too disjointed. You can't get on a roll. Bradley said the same thing, that he couldn't get on a roll and he wished there wasn't a brake here after Sachsenring. Valentino always just used that exact same phrase that the Bridgestone was all about faith. It was all about trust in the tyre. And the Michelin, you got feel. And someone said to him, well, what about the crashes people have had on the front end? And he goes, yeah, but... The point is that the Michelin does go, whereas the Bridgestone didn't go
it
at all.
It never did.
But you could feel it, at least.
Yeah,
well,
there used to be. I mean, I always remember Michelins. We're going back to when they were probably more like solid tyres without air in them when I was riding on them. But at the end of the day, they had feel. You could feel the things working and how far you could go with it right to the very edge before it finally let go. It was a real... It had that kind of momentum, that kind of feel right the way through to the limit. I'm wondering why so many riders are crossing that limit.
Well, Bridgestones. Bridgestones are...
It's in their memory, basically. It's in their memory.
This is what's happening. The Bridgestones, you could get away with murder. You could have 10 bar of pressure, 50-degree lane angle going in. It never moved. It was always there. You can't do that. I mean, the Michelin, you simply, if you try too hard, you can overload it. Once you overload it, then you have to let off the brake to turn, but you're still going too fast. So you got to brake some more. And it all compounds itself into losing the front end.
Using the word compound, of course, on purpose there, I'm sure. What about Cal Crutchlow while we're just on the Brits? Someone else who looked like he was getting back to some semblance of his form. And then, unfortunately, Aston came. Should go well here in Sachsenring. We've talked about the Honda, how it's gone round here. He's gone well round here. Podium
I worry
here.
About this track this weekend. I really do. I think that with the weather it is, if it stays the way it is at the moment, the forecast is all over the place. We don't quite know what we're going to get come race day. Every single Grand Prix rider crashing at Assam, fortunately most getting away with hardly any injury whatsoever. But here, that turn 11 frightens the life out of me just standing there looking at it, let alone riding it.
A couple of riders say turn 1 is also a sketchy one.
Yeah,
going over the crest.
Turn 1's pretty sketchy. Turn 11, I'm assuming, is this one
the
coming down
the
hill.
The faster waterfall, we'd call.
When you drop off the edge of a cliff.
It's the worst corner in Grand Prix history that I've ever ridden. I hate it. I can't stand it. And I was always slow through there.
But just on Cal, are we going to see him?
Yeah,
getting right back up there.
So he was in Malaysia.
He was with you, wasn't he?
Last weekend, testing with me.
For Michelin mainly. I understand.
Honda, Michelin, yes. So yeah, he was doing a bit of both. A couple runs, I think.
Well, what he said to me, Cal, was that it was Michelin that sent them over there. They tested some electronic things for Honda, but Michelin sent them over there mainly because they feel that the test rider at the moment they've been using isn't up to speed, and they needed someone up there. He's got days left. Danny and Mark don't have many days left in terms of testing.
It's good testing for Cal. And I mean, it's the right time of the year when you've got that break. We were just talking about it. If you're losing momentum, if you've gone and done a proper test.
Yeah, and Gav, you're absolutely accurate on that. Their test rider just doesn't quite have the pace to get things done. Cal, I won't tell you everything that was said, obviously, but they're struggling. You know, it's not a secret that the Honda's not the best bike out there at the moment. And he's struggling, and I think the tests, you know, just laps on a bike and trying to figure out a couple of these electronics things, it'll help him for this weekend.
It will help him. It's good faith, actually, being put in by HRC to trust him to do something like that.
He seems to have a good relationship, doesn't he, with Shuhei Nakamoto? You see Nakamoto sat with him sometimes, and they seem to have a good relationship.
Eugene Laverty, just to touch on the Northern Irishman briefly, points run continuing. He's putting himself in a shop window. We don't know where he's going to be next year.
World Superbike.
A lot of people say there's lots of offers from people in World Superbike. Anyone who doesn't have a two-rider team, they've offered him a ride, desperately.
I can see that there's a good payday coming somewhere there. There'll be that balancing act between what he's got available here and what someone's prepared to pay.
How old is Eugene?
29. 30,
you know, I mean, 20, I don't know. I'd like to see him stay personally. I think, you know, he's having his flashes, you know, of good races and points and staying consistent. We know he's not on the best bike, absolutely. I'd like to see him stay. I think he's a hell of a talent.
I would think he'd like to see him stay. But it all depends on what's...
It's what's offered him, I think, in terms of what if Aspar stay with the Ducati, if they get a 16 or they get 116, 115.2, which is the talk at the moment. He doesn't want to be the one left behind his teammates.
It's got to be the right bike at that age where he is at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be. Well, fingers crossed. Hopefully we'll find something else out about Eugene's future here this weekend in Germany. A couple of questions. We threw it out to you at BT Sport MotoGP on Twitter for you to fire through a few questions. So Joe Don would like to know who you think at this point of the year, who's overperformed and who's underperformed? Across the board.
Blimey.
That's a hard question.
That is a really hard question.
You've stumped him, Joe, but we're going to press him on
The thing is, you've got to think about it because the season's gone up and down for virtually everybody apart from Marc Márquez. Marc Márquez is overperformed. I think that's pretty clear, isn't it? I think we can say that as a certainty. Do you agree with that one?
I would say after Qatar, seeing what happened there, first race, I think I would have never bet that he was leading the championship by 20-something points come the halfway round. I would have definitely bet against that.
Underperformed for me and looking to get a real smack on Twitter for this one, Bradley.
Right.
I really did think Bradley was going to go. He has made two step changes since I've been back in this paddock. Both of them positively. 2014, he stepped up. He went for it. 2015, he stepped up again. And this year, for whatever reason, I'm not blaming Bradley, but I think it's as much a team thing as I said earlier on. The fact that Pol Espargaró and he in the Tech 3 team have not stepped up with the new electronics and tyre package, that smacks to me as much of a team overall thing as much as it does a rider thing. But Bradley...
Colin, I mean, I could say Bradley or Alex Espargaró. I think if you were going to look at the top teams, I would say Dovizioso. Honestly, I think when you look at what he did last year, he was on the podium. I mean, he had a really good run going there. So you would expect that bike just to get better, you know, and the results to get better. And I think...
But it tailed off a bit last year as well, didn't it, after that great start? We know he's been taken out two or three times. But you're right, it doesn't look like it's quite going to be there. Although Assen, again, it didn't look bad. He was on pole position.
Yeah, true. So I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
more than me. Yeah. Johnny O'Donnell wants to know about the ban on wings. Will this hit Ducati and Dovizioso and Jorge Lorenzo hard? Who else will be affected?
Do you know what? It's funny, isn't it? Because there were certain journos, mentioning no names, Matt, that were campaigning like mad at getting rid of the wings and saying how ridiculous they were and all the rest of it. And then the next piece I read recently this week, I think by the same journo, about how people were struggling to get the front end weighted and all the rest of it, which is exactly what the plan of wings were. I'm actually slightly shocked that there's been a huge bit of momentum to try and ban them completely, because I believe that prototype racing, as this is, there are development areas that should be allowed. I think the problem has come is that Ducati have overdone it a bit. If there'd been a maximum dimensional thing for the overall motorcycle, you know, 600 mil wide by however many meters long, and not above the front axle or behind the axle, or whatever the actual parameters would have been a much more sensible way of doing this, rather than say we're banning aerodynamics. Do you know how thick that book's going to have to be to cater
for a ban?
That's
the thing, because surely you turn the fairing into a
wing. My point.
Well, I have some good. It's kind of disappointing, honestly, because this last week went to Malaysia track. We know those problems we had there. Testing wings were on the bike. I've never tested the wings, never had them on there, and then showed up, bike just had them on there, went out, oh, we got this, test it. Well, how the hell do you test something when you don't know what it feels? I hadn't been on a bike in 4 months, so
no baseline.
I jumped on it, did the whole, you know, couple days testing, but we never took them off so I could actually get a back-to-back to understand it. Did I feel anything astronomical that popped into my mind from 4 months ago? No. I mean, honestly, I didn't. I didn't even really notice.
Yeah, the fast ones are quite good for putting your coffee on.
Yeah.
The fast guy's going to be fast, and the bikes are going to. It's not going to adversely affect Ducati that much.
So, what is this? Some kind of dark art and marketing bull that we're suffering here? I mean, it must do something. Ducati have got Ducati.
But
Audi,
then, what
Audi
I'm saying is, they're not
going
to lose a massive advantage by not having wings on them.
But the MSMA. I mean, what is the purpose of the MSMA? They couldn't agree, so they banned them. I mean, Ducati have put a lot of effort into this.
And money.
Well, that's my effort equals money in racing. I just wonder, you know, whether it's a missed opportunity for something down the road as soon as you ban something. I mean, yeah. I did hear from the hierarchy that they were, if they'd seen seamless gearboxes on the horizon, they'd banned them before they got here as well because of the cost element in it. I mean, I just worry that MotoGP is a prototype thing. And without doubt, seamless gearboxes will benefit road bikes in future. I'm not sure wings will, but...
Yeah, instead of a $14,000 bike, you're going to have a $24,000 bike to buy. Yeah. I disagree with banning them, like he says. I think it's the pinnacle, it's the top of the top prototype. Okay, yeah, diameters and dimensions and all that, we should probably get under control, but I'm all for them.
And a final question from Kiko Giles on Twitter as well, at BT Sport MotoGP. Would you rather see the German Grand Prix elsewhere?
Kiko always comes up with something good, doesn't he? He's a youngster, this Kiko. He's going to be taken over from us in here one day. I know that. So thanks for your question, Kiko. We get him every week on Twitter. You can follow him as well, believe it or not. He's definitely into the more modern-day communications. Don't know. Where would we go?
Well, Hockenheim and
Yeah, but Hockenheim's fine, but it's really...
Nürburgring's pretty much gone, isn't it?
Nürburgring is...
As a concern.
I think, my opinion... The fans here are unbelievable.
Well, this is it.
I don't think you can change it from here. I think the history of what this place has offered for many years and what the fans have grown up with.
I was here a few weeks ago with Phil Reed, and he took me on a lap, I took him on a lap, shall we say, of the old circuit. And some of the stories were fantastic. So, to Jim Redman, who was here, said there used to be 450,000 people, you know, in the stands, on poles. They were on poles up in the air, and the six sat at the top of these poles.
Well, when it was behind the Iron Curtain.
Because it was behind the Iron Curtain, and that's sort of a relic here in terms of the amount of people we get here over a race week.
Well, it's the same with Brno. I mean, the first time I raced at Brno, it was behind the Iron Curtain, and that's on a road circuit back then. I mean, it is a fantastic bit. Hockenheim, they've cut it all apart. I mean, Hockenheim isn't Hockenheim anymore.
It's not. You know, that was the grandparents and the grandparent and the aunts and uncles that are, you know, telling the kids now the stories of, we used to do this. There are 400,000 people. So that's kind of that myth has built, you know, throughout the years. And I believe that's part of the reason why we still have a humongous crowd here.
Yeah. And even though you don't like the track.
Even though it's a pile of junk.
And hopefully it doesn't rain too much, because I remember a few years ago the campsite's been washed away because of how much rain there was over a race weekend. So
it's on a hill, you just don't want to be parked at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. You want to be at the top, although you've got further to go if you're at the top. You're further like the luge down the hill. Moto2, just quickly, Taka Nakagami winning at Assen. That was a victory that's been in the post for a while.
Do you know what? Three new riders winning, three new teams winning in their classes. I mean, Assen throws up something, doesn't it? It really does. I mean, Nakagami, he threatened it. The first year I came back, 2014, he looked like he was going to be the man that was going to be able to do it. Finally.
Yeah, that year battling with Scott Redding and Paul Espargaró, where he finished, I think, 5 second places in a row or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's been there or thereabouts, hasn't he?
Absolutely. We've said this forever, Nakagami, hot and cold. You never know. Just depends on how the truck, you know, the bike comes off the truck. But yeah, for him to go out there and he slayed it, you know, I mean, he killed it and it was good for him.
I feel better for Teddy than I do even for Nakagami.
Yeah, no,
Teddy
Okada,
it's just
few less worry lines on that forehead, perhaps, for Teddy. At the top, obviously, Zarkon Rins tied on 1-2-6. Sam Lowe's on 1-2-1, just five behind. Pick a winner out of that three, if you will.
Ooh, I don't know. Speaking of Sam Lowe's, he was in the motorhome earlier. I'm talking about his, I guess he went and tested the
Aprilia at Misano, yeah.
Pretty lengthy conversation. He said, my arms are a little bit longer. I was like, I didn't get it. And he goes, yeah, that MotoGP bike's pulling my arms out of the socket. So good on him. But yeah, 5 points behind. This is the time. We always say that this is the time you got to, you know, hunker down, but be in the midway break. You just don't want to do anything stupid, you know, stay in the battle.
We asked the questions of Zarko last year, didn't we, before the midway break. Was he going to be able to carry that momentum past the summer break? He did.
Yeah.
Somewhat awesomely.
So it's important, isn't it, to get the result here. He actually, Sam, Alex Rins and Taka Nakagami, the only three to have scored points in every round. That's been crucial so far. So, as you say, important to bring home points. In Moto3, we mentioned those three new winners. Pecco Bagnaia there, new winner in Mahindra as well. Another one where the victory was long overdue, well-deserved. Him and Factory.
The Factory, I mean, you could see a tear in the eye of the Factory. A lot of Factory personnel, Mahindra personnel at the track last time out. New gearboxes this weekend. John McPhee, 22 today.
Happy birthday today. John, yeah.
Happy birthday, John McPhee. He'll get a new gearbox from Mahindra for his Peugeot because they've all got to have the new gearboxes fitted. If one gets them, they all get them, of course. That's part of the rules for Moto3. But it's going to be really interesting whether this is the time of Mahindra. Is this going to be the Factory that's going to start sticking it to Honda and KTM?
Bagnaia's been up there without that. I mean,
but he's been the only one virtually.
He's a demon, though, isn't he? Yeah. On the brakes, he looks good. I think of all those coming through the VR46 Academy, you know. Okay, we've seen Bulliger. But Bagnaia's been there regularly now for the last couple of seasons on a bike which perhaps isn't as solid as the Honda or KTM.
I think we've been seeing it happen all. You know, it's been coming all year, and we finally saw it at Assen and see him win.
And it wasn't dry. Brad Binder in 12th place, but he does like it here. Still got 48 points ahead of Jorge Navarro, who, well, I have to say, only lost four. Actually,
he's going to be here, isn't he, Jorge? Yeah. He's going to be watching, but not riding. Is he riding?
Well, I really don't know yet. I don't know what the situation is.
Oh, well, there you go.
I know he's going to be here, but I wasn't sure, so we'll have to wait and find out tomorrow morning. When we are live, of course, on BT Sport 2, that's going to be at 8 a.m. in the morning, probably 5 to 8, actually. I've had a few people tell me that they've set the recorder for 8 a.m. 5 to 8 it will be Friday morning for the first practice for Moto3. Then, of course, as well, throughout the whole weekend on BT Sport 2. And make sure as well you download our review podcast following the race here in Germany. And remember, you can watch every session live, including the warm-ups here. Thank you very much, Keith. Cheers, Colin, as well. I hope you have a great weekend. And thank you very much for listening. We'll speak to you after the race.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.